I was worried. I thought today was Thursday. It's not even Friday, and Susie is already here. So that means it must be Wednesday.
What? Yes, by yes. default, it's Wednesday.
It's a Neil Diamond Wednesday.
Right, exactly, that we know about this morning. Now, that's even more confusing for me. This morning, we're going to work to make Elyria a healthier city. And to do that, the folks at Wesleyan Community Senior Community have brought in Dr. Roger Landry, who's a retired former chief flight surgeon at the Air Force Surgeon General's Office, and he's also a preventative medicine physician who spent over a decade kind of working to get rid of the stereotypes about aging. He's put together a book called Live Long, Die Short, A Guide to Authentic Health and Successful Aging. At what point in your life did you think, this aging thing is not too bad? It's not what people think it's supposed to be.
Well, you always think, Bruce, that, 40 is old and 50 is old until you get in the neighborhood. And then you start to say, I can make more of this and I better because it's all I've got,
We'll talk about some of the stereotypes we have about aging and what you found not to be true about those things.
Well, we have a stereotype. We have a whole language in our society that builds on the stereotype that aging is only about decline. And we all feel that we associate certain baggage with certain ages. Very quick story. I met Chuck Yeager once in my career and did a physical on him. And then he told me about his career and says, on the 50th anniversary of breaking the sound barrier, I'm going to do it. And I told him, Chuck, you'll be 73. He just looked at me and said, what's your point? Exactly. If we associate a whole lot of baggage with a number or a certain age, and it's usually about decline because that's a stereotype, more than likely, that's what's going to happen.
In Ohio, we had John Glenn going back up in space.
You bet.
What is it about these Air Force guys or these guys who go in flight that somehow they've reached a higher point than the rest of us that it doesn't matter to them?
They never say die. Or maybe they get hypoxic at high altitudes and don't know any better. No, I think they're just very vibrant people, goal-oriented, and realize that if you make the investment in your health, And you don't have to conform to that stereotype. We know now that lifestyle is the major determinant in how we age. The 70% of how we age is lifestyle. So that's the choices we make. So we make the right choices. We don't have to have an aging experience that's only about decline.
At what point should we be aware or make a conscious effort to put some of these things in place?
Kindergarten. Yes, absolutely. This is our goal. But right now, we're starting where the money is, so to speak, in the older. Since we're aging as a nation, soon every fifth person will be over 65. And so we're starting with that. And leaders like Wesley Village, Wesleyan Senior Living, and the 70 other partners we have with Masterpiece Living, we're changing the dialogue. We're showing that a certain investment in lifestyle, the opportunity to do things, can result in big return on investment.
You talk about choices. What kind of choices?
These choices have to do with, first of all, we found that the lifestyle where people refuse to rust out, they challenge themselves physically and mentally. They're socially connected, very, very important. In our society, we get more isolated as we age, and that raises our risks. So, if you live in a retirement community like Wesley Village, you have a built-in community there, but you stay in your home, and statistically, you're going to get more and more isolated. What we eat is really important. Susie, I know, is here looking at me saying,
Susie's
you betcha.
Susie's here with my smoothie in hand today.
That's right. And we've sort of gone off the track relative to what we eat. Fruits, nuts, vegetables, wild grains, fish, small amounts of meat, that Mediterranean diet. But it's very important also that we identify what our risks are and make the choice to lower those risks, because we can make huge differences now with things that used to be a death sentence, but now you can work with it and have high quality lives.
I'd like to know about the title of your book. What is it's Live Long, Die Short. What is die short?
That's a public health term, is called compression of morbidity. I wasn't going to put that on the title, that's for sure. Morbidity is when we're sick and impaired, and we want to compress the time that we are sick and impaired. So rather than imagine a graph where you're born, you get the graph goes up, you stay at the top for decades, and then you begin a period of decline, and it's long and slow and expensive and degrading and your loss of independence. But imagine that it doesn't go down like that. The graph continues across straight, or maybe dips a little, but continues straight all the way to 9th, 10th decade, and then just drops. That's That would be the compression of morbidity. So I want to age like a leaf, I say. I want to get more colorful as I age, blend with others to make more beauty, and when my time comes, I just want to fall off the tree.
It's like the roller coasters at Cedar Point, where you get that nice, you know, it's like it's a lot of fun, and then there's sort of the big drop. It's not like a slow type of thing.
Exactly.
Basically, you want to like shut off the light and... And that's the end of your life at that point.
Exactly.
You
want to do it.
Well, like the roller coaster, you know, I'm petrified of that part. You're going up, up, up. You're looking at that age go up, up, up. And then all of a sudden you think, that's it. I'm going down. I'm going to crash. But really, one of the things that I've learned, and this conversation started because we rode up in the elevator together this morning and I had my smoothie. And so we started talking and learned about your talk today. And the thing that I've learned as I hopefully gracefully get older, is that I can be a lot healthier than people my age. Now, you never know what's going to happen. You know, people have heart attacks that are eating relatively a healthy lifestyle and living a healthy lifestyle. So you can't eat certain foods thinking that it's going to completely prohibit anything from happening to you, but it really can make a difference. And we were talking about the easiest groups of people to influence are children, because you are in control of what they eat when they're born and for a certain length of time. And the group that you're speaking to today, which would be considered, they're not boomers, what would they be considered?
Pre-boomers, before the boomers, the ahead of the age wave that's coming.
Because you were talking about Victory Gardens, and they
yes.
understand
yes.
Natural eating and live foods.
Well, we know lifestyle and what you eat, who you spend your time with, how connected you are, whether you just challenge yourself physically and mentally. This lifestyle has tremendous power, so that we have studies now that show that people have a gene, that we can identify someone has a gene for a disease. And a lifestyle can suppress that gene, make that gene not declare itself, and so that gene is never expressed, and therefore you never see the disease. Even something like Alzheimer's, we have a nun study that showed that these nuns, after a life of being physically and mentally active, when they died, old, their brains on autopsy were Alzheimer brains, and yet they had no symptoms. Because the conclusion, and now it's mainline science, that a lifestyle has the possibility of even suppressing those symptoms or pushing them back so that they occur later and later. And it's that way with many diseases. Lifestyle is so powerful, and it's under our control. We should feel empowered.
We're talking today with Dr. Roger Landry. The book is Live Long, Die Short, A Guide to Authentic Health and Successful Aging. It's just been out. How is it doing? I guess the idea is, what, you can write a book all you want. If it sits on the shelf, it doesn't no good. So
that's
you got
to
get the word out there. And that's kind of what you're doing as well today over at the Wesleyan Senior Community. You'll be the event's going on from 4:30 to 6:30. Mayor Brenda will be out there kind of getting people encouraged to find out about some of the things you're talking about today. You mentioned about the brain and dementia and health. There are some, I mean, hereditary things that you have. So your parents are kind of somewhat responsible, not only in how you grow up, but the genes that they've given us. What do we have to help in that regard? I mean,
well, the research is pretty clear now that we figure genes influence how we age by about 30%. Maybe a little bit more with the mental, but with the physical and the rest of it, it's about only 30%. And as we age, that effect gets even less. So by the time we're 50 or 60 or so, if we've made it that far and then we don't have a certain disease, the genetic aspect is almost nil, and it's almost all lifestyle. So what we said, what the research has told us, you know, keeping active, continuing to learn, staying engaged with people, having a role and a purpose. You know, we tend to, I like to say we pasteurize our older adults, not like milk, but like horses. We marginalize them at a certain age. Thank you for all you've done. Put you over here. You don't have a role. This is deadly for older adults. Need a role.
We see that sometimes, too, I think, with people who retire. Some people look forward to it. Other people dread it. And I would think for some people, it'd be a mighty tough thing to do, and maybe not healthy.
It is. I mean, we used to see, I was in the military, as you said, for a long time. We used to see people would retire at 48, 49, have no plan, and be dead within 7 years. That was the mean age. Imagine that. And so purpose is critical. I mean, our ancestors, and again, prior to the Industrial Revolution, elders were critical to the functioning of a society. They guided it. They gave the, in the blue zones, which, you know, are areas of the world where people age very long and stay vital. Older adults are treasures, and they're part of the society, an important part. Since the Industrial Revolution, we've kind of marginalized them, and we're paying a high price for that.
Does that happen because with Industrial Revolution technology, and there's always technology that the new younger people invent that somehow the older people haven't become a part of? Normally, it was just the wisdom of the elders in the sense, where now it's like, how do you plug this in? Where does it go? And it seems to make them seem more feeble or less, you know, less in charge of it.
Exactly, Craig. I mean, I think we're developing at such an exponential rate that it's very easy for any of us at any age saying, I can't keep up, you know, and to be marginalized because of technology. But one way or the other, we're going to pay a huge price for that. So, but we have, over at Wesley Village, I'm sure the computer literacy is growing drastically, and we're seeing that throughout all the communities we partner with. It's the most rapidly growing segment of the population using the internet, email, and you know they're a little behind. They're just beginning to text and Twitter and Facebook, but they are doing it, and I think that's a sign of healthy aging, in that you're staying connected to the world. And so we can't let it be a barrier. It is one of those variables that probably helped.
Well, you mentioned about being connected. It does that one part. You talk about how they become isolated. This is another way to connect with family that may not be able to be there with them, with the face-to-face, with Skyping and things. You can see that.
Absolutely.
But there's also that sort of new technology, which then I would assume your brain still has to develop a little bit of, if you think of something new or something else is learning, there is some activity that's going on in your brain that, you know, is what you did when you were growing up, learning new things all the time.
Absolutely. We can scan brains now, and as we learn a new skill, and technology can be that, we see the brain actually get larger and larger, and new brain tissue, and that's very healthy and probably makes the likelihood of dementia symptoms less. However, I would like to say that as humans, connection for us is face-to-face. You know, as we look right here, this is what we really require. The technology has a way of enhancing that and helping, but without face-to-face, we're going to be in deep trouble, because this is how we're wired as humans to connect with each other. Maybe 2/3 of communication is nonverbal.
We had a interview last hour with a woman who's done some with oral history, and they do this in Oberlin, which is kind of an interesting way too for people to sort of recollect of things that went on in their childhood, plus show the experiences that they have, get more connected with an elderly person whose life you may know from a certain period, but their whole life has so many areas that they have long forgotten or maybe haven't shared, and it's an opportunity to do that.
It's so very true, and storytelling is just a part of who we are, and it resonates with us. And you know, there's probably a myth out there that young people don't want to be associated with older adults, and nothing could be further from the truth. They're fascinated by older adults and the stories that they have to say, and probably need that to grow in a way that's fully integrated with, you know, who we are as the circle of life and aging and all of that. And older adults need children, so Wesley Village over there, they have kids in there all the time, and that makes everybody healthier.
So we know that part of aging in a healthy way is being engaged, it's having a purpose, it's eating right. I think the eating right part can be such a challenge for people. What is something that is just the get started, get on track, the inspiration? If you haven't really been eating right and you know you could do better, what are some of the things that'll get you started?
Well, first of all, any change we make in our life should be small. We as Americans tend to make the big New Year's resolution thing, like I'm only going to eat bark now for the next 6 months, you know, and it's not sustainable, you know. So it's small changes. The basic core diet that we need to be healthy, the best name for it now is the Mediterranean diet. It's fruits, nuts, vegetables, wild grains, fish, small amounts of meat. And if that's the core, you know, you can, you know, chocolate, you have to have chocolate. You can't live without chocolate or even fatty foods as desserts and sugar. But sugar is really toxic to us, and so we should really limit what we have. So there's a good first step.
Well, and with Easter coming up, that's going to be, you know, the kids obviously are going to be inundated with it. But then, you know, the adults, we have our little Easter basket out in the lobby there. It's really hard to stay away from it.
Well, again, the way to start, I think, is just small steps. You know, someone actually recommended to me, okay, eat the candy bar, but spit out the first bite. You know, it's just a beginning, a small change, and then eventually you can get where you want to be. But small changes, but realize that's where you need to be. Set a date, be patient, and so work to get the main part of your diet, that Mediterranean diet.
I was reminded of the time when people look through that box of, you know, Valentine's candy, and they look at, and they eat it, coconut, cherry, and they look for the caramel one. That's the basically.
How about Halloween when you get an apple or an orange? You know.
I don't want to be in the lobby when people start taking the first bite of chocolate out there and spitting it.
Well,
out.
Then we need another basket, right?
Like a spittoon. Yeah.
I didn't say that.
I'm down with the small steps, though. I think that's really valuable because
that's
people get overwhelmed and just don't do anything.
Yes, you're right, Susie.
That's a lot of what you'll talk about today, going on at Wesleyan Senior Community at 4:30 to 6:30. The event over there. You'll be speaking to them. Our guest today has been Dr. Roger Landry, who's a former Chief Flight Surgeon at the Air Force Surgeon General. What did you do there? I was curious to know the big title, but what does that mean for you?
From the Air Force point of view, I kept flyers from crashing. It was preventive medicine, determining, helping people perform at their very best. And so I would determine for most of my career whether a flyer would fly that day or whether he'd have to be grounded. So it was preventive, and these guys were healthy. But even a small little illness, and they would crash. Air Force frowned upon losing an airplane in a flyer. So
you'd be looking in their eyes, asking them questions, checking their rates?
Yes, I would do that, particularly when they were sick, and do regular physicals. But I would live with them. I would deploy with them. I would fly with them. I had to fly all their missions, combat, everything, in order to know the world.
You knew when they were in good shape and not when
exactly.
Because they'll probably lie to you.
They will.
As much
got
as
it.
They
you
can,
got it,
they want
Craig.
To get up there as
you
quickly
it,
as possible.
Craig. That's absolutely true.
But you were also a surgeon.
No, the surgeon is the military term for doctor. So as a flight surgeon,
okay.
We were preventive medicine, so it was to keep people healthy. If they did need a surgeon, I got my buddy.
All right.
He's the one that had the black bag with the knives in or something.
That's
and
right.
I'm sure they never needed it because you kept them so healthy.
I did indeed. I just had a reunion with 250 of them, and I was pleased to say a number of them said, "You saved my life, Doc."
Oh, nice.
Well, that's good to hear. Well,
die short. That's the goal.
Well, that's what it is. Live long, die short, a guide to authentic health and successful aging is the name of the book. Thank you for stopping in and sharing the advice.
My pleasure, Craig. Thank you very much, all of you. It's been fun.